Hello and welcome to the Squawker Talker. My name is Thomas Rooney, and as we look back at an action-packed weekend in the Premier League and across Europe, I'm joined by Mohamed Butt. How's it going, mate?
I'm doing okay, yeah. How are you? Good to be back.
Excellent, yeah, I'm very good, thank you. And we've also got Jake Entwistle with us as well. How are you doing, mate?
You have got me, unfortunately. I'm well.
Excellent. So we're going to start by looking back at the Premier League weekend. Obviously, lots of talking points, and obviously as the weeks go by, you're starting to see how teams are shaping up. Still very early days, but we've got to start with, unfortunately, Mo, with Man United. I know we've got a lot to say on this, but...
Well, fortunately for Brighton.
Well, true, they played very well. The first bit is who takes the blame for it? Because there's been this Man United... With Manchester United, there's been like Mourinho versus the players or player power, but for that performance on its own, who was more at fault, the players or Mourinho?
I mean, it's a hierarchy of blame, really. Firstly, you should say that Paul Pogba stepped up and said, and he did a bit of a Joe Hart, he was like, oh, I was rubbish, I'm sorry. Which, I mean... That kind of thing is only good if you actually then stop being rubbish. So let's see what happens next week with Pogba. You would imagine he'll improve. But no, it's a hierarchy of blame. There's no one player, no one team that is to blame. Everyone is to blame. But it's a hierarchy. So the players, right? Obviously, Eric Bailly was just shocking. Mm. Like, he made every wrong decision you could make. I don't think he did a single thing right all game. No. He made one good heady clearance, to be fair.
It's his worst performance for United, wasn't it?
Awful. Absolutely awful. Winter Lindelof, not much better. Pogba looked listless until the last 30 minutes, then he suddenly came to life. And I mean, and to be fair to him, he came to life. The only United player that emerges with any credit is, of all people, Luke Shaw, who didn't really get beat by it down his flank, defended well, made more tackles than the rest of the defence combined, and you know, actually looked good in attack. Looked like he's forced something, forced the goal for Lukaku as well. I mean, Lukaku was okay, just starved the service, but... Yeah, they were bad. The players weren't good. But the players were set out in a very strange tact fashion... by Jose Mourinho. Players don't just miraculously become listeners. How do you have the most time to prepare for this game United have had since Friday night?
Yeah.
You know, and then still look this disorganized. I mean, Pogba's saying out here saying we didn't prepare for the game properly. Like, what the hell were you doing?
How does that happen?
Like, you've had so long. And, you know, so that's on Mourinho. Mourinho didn't prepare his players properly. What has Mourinho done to Eric Bailly is a good question as well, because, of course, this guy, when Mourinho signed him, looked like an absolute... He was inexperienced. He only had a season and a half of football under his belt, but he looked like a titan. He looked born to play in the Premier League. Now, obviously, he's not a defensive organiser. He was never going to be, as Gary Neville has gone on about, he's never going to be a lead centre-half. You know, he's not going to organise the defence, but he looked like a great defender within himself. And yet now, after Mourinho dropped him and then started criticising him publicly for, I mean, what amounts to being injured and not wanting to run back from injury or something. I don't know. Now he looks like a nervous wreck whenever he's anywhere. I mean, he played well last week, but now that's looking like a fluke because he didn't look good in pre-season either. So Mourinho has to go, takes more of the blame than the players because his tactics were wrong. I think he made okay subs, but not really. I don't think he acted quick enough. And I think, you know, he abandoned the 3-5-2 that was working in pre-season as well, which I think was a big mistake because it really covered for United's lack of wingers, which again has come into sharp focus. But more than Mourinho, Ed Woodward has to take the most blame.
Yeah.
Because how many summers now since Ferguson, United have needed when Ferguson left, then United needed almost a full root and branch overhauling of the squad because Ferguson was the greatest manager of all time, won titles with absolutely baffling players in positions that you thought, there's no way you can win a title with those guys, and he did. So the player, you know, the squad needed a big overhaul. There's a lot of old players in there. United didn't do it. United have invested a lot of money in the squad. I know everyone says, oh, Mourinho's been back. Mourinho has been backed and he's been given who he wants. So has Van Gaal. But a lot of the acquisitions were not strategic enough. You know, they haven't identified... They've waited so long to address the fullbacks. They've only really done it halfway with a 19-year-old, Diego Dalot. Who knows how good he'll be, but the onus on him now is to come in and be amazing because Ashley Young was terrible today.
Yeah.
Valencia's looked terrible. Luke Shaw looks like he's going to save them from themselves with not addressing a left back. They didn't sign a centre half and they needed someone like Toby Alderweireld. They moved Marcus Rojo, they freed up the number 5 shirt and they didn't sign Toby Alderweireld. I don't know what that was all about. Like you look at the United saying, yeah, you could put Alderweireld in there next to Lindelof, next to Bailly, and he'd be the leader. You know, like I said, Bailly's not a lead centre half. Alderweireld definitely is a lead centre half, you know. And then Woodward's out here briefing that, oh no, we were just holding out 100 million for Varane. Real Madrid are not going to sell Rafa Varane. He's literally one of the best five defenders in the world. They're not stupid. They're not going to sell him. This is the thing. Woodward has been undermined. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Jose Mourinho. Everyone knows this. But if you've got Jose Mourinho as a manager, you have to back him. You have to give him what he wants and hope that he gives you what you want him, which is trophies and success. But he hasn't backed him. He's not only has he not backed Mourinho, he's undermined him actively. Like, oh yeah, we didn't think the players he was suggesting would improve United's defence. Are you kidding me? Like, Alderweireld for 65 million wouldn't improve United's defence. Like, I know it's a lot of money for a 29-year-old with, I mean, I was always against paying, I said pay for Maguire, but you look at, you know, at some point you have to be like, you know what, just pay the guy, just pay Spurs, because United need Alderweireld. Like, going back a long time, remember Michael Carrick, United paid 18 million for Michael Carrick, and everyone was going crazy about, oh my, I mean, by the way, it shows how much inflation has, 10 years ago, and 18 million was, but everyone was like, oh my God, that's so much money, what have you done, what have you done? And I made the point at the time that, it's a lot of money for Carrick, objectively, if you're saying, is Carrick worth that much? No, he wasn't. But to United, who needed a controlling passing midfield at the base of midfield, he's absolutely worth that because he would enable everyone else to play better. What happened was they signed Carrick, won 3 titles in 3 years, made two Champions League finals in 4 years. It's like, ooh, maybe he, you know, and it's just because what is a player worth? So Alderweireld, objectively, is he worth that much money? No. To Man United, who desperately need a controlling centre-half? I mean, come on.
But that's why Levy would have been asking for so much.
Yeah, exactly.
He'd been reluctant.
Yeah, he knows that, doesn't he? Yeah.
It's just this whole, as you've said there, if you don't keep a manager that is, because Mourinho made those comments about how he'd been demoted to head coach and stuff, didn't he? So if someone is of that sort of opinion of themselves and they want to be all controlling and all conquering as the manager, then you either let them be like that or you just get rid of them. You can't change how Mourinho is going to feel and how he wants to behave as a manager. He had great success when he first came to the Premier League and probably was in charge of this, got players that he wanted and created this incredibly defensive team that also scored a lot of goals. Chelsea were brilliant. But don't expect him to change his ways. Now, he's not a new coach, is he? As we said, he's been around for a while. So in the same ways that Wenger was criticised for sort of being stubborn, and he was, Mourinho now is being stubborn in something that needs to be changed, and the only way to change that is either change the person in charge or change the person in charge of him.
Yeah, they're a bit in between at the moment, aren't
they? Yeah, so it's like they're trying to bring in this sort of new wave of how to run a club, similar to the way that Man City have been doing and Liverpool to an extent as well. But they've got a manager that doesn't want that. So then that just breeds apathy towards the relationship that's in that squad. And then you get performances like that against Brighton. And obviously Brighton have now won 3 home games in a row over the span of about 30 years against Man United. But they'll definitely take that. And they were brilliant.
They were.
Like the fact that Glenn Murray, at 34 years old, he absolutely schooled Lindelof and Bailly, didn't he? Yeah. The whole game. His movement was incredible. He won pretty much every aerial duel. That finish was unbelievable.
It was so good.
If you watch that whole goal, he throws Lindelof in front of him, moves behind him, and then as the crosses comes in, runs in front, back in front, and that incredible dink finish. So Glenn Murray had an incredible game, and now he's got the only top six side he hasn't scored a Premier League goal against is Spurs. So he'll be looking to cross that
still
one off this
come,
season.
Yeah.
Because Brighton aren't even playing their new signings. Mm. And this is the complete opposite to Man United here. Mm. Chris Hughton is a very good manager, and he's proved that, and he can run a team. But he's completely let Brighton spend the money and bring in recruits. Mm. Maybe I'm giving him a disservice, but the way that club's being run and the amount of signings they're making and the amount of sort of unknown quantities they're investing in, it strikes me that they have got a system in place where there is recruitment based on eyes and sort of numbers as well. People are watching these players. People are analysing them statistically. Jahan Bash was incredible in the Eredivisie. He was top 5 for pretty much every attacking metric. So they've bought him. He hasn't played yet. And then that's Chris Hughton's job, isn't it? The people above him will say, Chris Hughton, we've identified, if you said you need a winger, we've identified this player to fill that. Use him as you please. Whereas Mourinho at Man United, it seems, I want these 5 players, give me them now.
Absolutely.
And it's like, well, we don't want to. Whereas, so I just think there's a complete contrast in how maybe it should be run. Maybe I'm giving Brighton too much credit and Chris Hughton is a mastermind and he picked them all. We don't know, but it strikes me as both clubs being run in polar opposite ways. And Brighton, obviously, they were poor in their first game. All of their players admitted that, and they've come back and looked incredible against United.
Bounced back. Yeah,
Brighton to me look like they run like a La Liga side. Very, very well. Like Jake says, there's clear scouting going on. There's intelligent scouting going on. Jahan Bash is a brilliant signing, and this is the thing. Now they can slowly start to integrate these new signings. And I mean, once they get Jahan Bash integrated, I mean, imagine, like, as Jake said, the guy top scorer there in Eredivisie, imagine him playing off Glenn Murray. Like, that could be really potent for Brighton. And I mean, I think they've done really, really good business, and I like the way they're playing. And it is, United just, I mean, look, you have to look at things like this as well. Obviously, like, again, not to harp on Mourinho too much, but like, Victor Lindelof had a really good World Cup playing for Sweden, right? playing in a deep line defence, which is the kind of thing you want, mate.
Sign Granqvist.
You know, I mean, yeah, no, look, and this is the thing. And then Eric Bailly looks good whenever he plays for pretty much anyone else that isn't Man United. So you have to wonder, like, how is it that these players are all coming together and looking so dysfunctional? Paul Pogba was amazing at the World Cup and, like, just doesn't look at it for United.
But the Pogba thing, saying now his attitude wasn't right, seems really strange. Yeah, he's Man United captain.
That is very much the early beginning, the start of the argument between Mourinho and Pogba. Or something. I think they're basically playing a war with each other in the media. Yeah. I think by Pogba fronting up and taking it on himself, he can then... Now he's taking the moral high ground. Like, oh, it was my fault. Brighton was my fault.
I can't understand it if it's like, I didn't play very well, but say my attitude wasn't right, it feels bad. He's in control of that, isn't he?
I think that's what I'm saying. I think he's sort of taking that on himself, like, my attitude wasn't right, because he knows that'll get the fans on his side. Fronting up will get the fans okay. And then also what he could say is, because he stuck it in there, we didn't prepare for the game properly. Now, that's not his fault. So he could say, my attitude wasn't right. I didn't give it 100%. I didn't try hard enough, because he knows the fans want to hear stuff like that. And then he's saying stuff like, we didn't prepare right. Suddenly, that's like, oh, that's on Mourinho, isn't it? I said this before, I think those two are going to have a big fight, and I think one of them is going to walk away. There's still time for it to be Pogba. That's the thing. That's the thing. The window isn't shut in Spain for another, 2 weeks, 10 days? That
seems crazy, doesn't it?
I don't think it'd be Pogba. I think United would be foolish. I think Mourinho will get sacked, because I think they will continue to bicker with each other like this. Mourinho's like, oh, I love him. But, you know, like, Souness is, he's giving him the lump of sugar. Like, he's not a horse, first of all. And... secondly, it's like, you know, they're playing this game with each other. So Mourinho is now bigging up Pogba, giving him the captaincy, because again, it's like, oh, see, I'm being nice to him. It's just all this part of brinksmanship with each other, because there's clearly been a relationship breakdown between the two of them. And I think
though that, like, even beyond that, they created four chances against Brighton.
I mean,
it was just like, we can speak about the Pogba, like, sort of Mourinho feud for the rest of the season, but wow, on the pitch they're just bad anyway. And whether that's born out of that is another thing, but the what I said at the beginning of the season and stuff was, the reason I don't rate Man United for the most part is, whether it's Mourinho's fault or whatever, is there's no, and every pundit and every pun, not just the pundits on TV, just everyone on social media, every person drew the same conclusion from that Brighton game. How were Man United trying to play? That was the one thing no one could work out.
I think the most damning thing was, I think, was it the penalty where De Gea just sort of flung a pass into Fred, who's like running backwards.
Well, it's Martial.
Oh, Martial.
I don't know. There was one moment where he threw it to Martial and he didn't know what was going on.
Basically, Fred is like, it's the penalty. He's like, Fred is in his half. He's kind of, there's no one near him, but you can see there's two Brighton players really oppress him, and De Gea just flings a pass into him, and it's like chest height. He's like trying to control it, doesn't control it, because he's too high for him to control, and then immediately gets pressed, dispossessed, and then they got run to the end and get the penalty. And I just remember thinking, what the hell was that? Because it's just sort of like, Fred is obviously the defensive midfielder, the guy who's comfortable on the ball, can play out and stuff like that, so you give him the ball to his feet, you don't fling a pass. It's just sort of like,
yeah, but that, he didn't really cover himself in much.
He didn't. He had a bad game. But
he tried to kick Glenn Murray and ended up nearly taking out Luke Shaw.
He nearly
put Luke Shaw on the sidelines for 9 months ago.
I think that moment encapsulated what was going on, because, like, Fred obviously has a certain skill set, and it's like, you can't even take advantage of that properly. Like, and Fred was bad. Everyone was bad. It's just that moment, sort of like, United trying to play football, but De Gea clearly, has he got the memo? Because he didn't pass it on the floor, and he sort of whacked it in with a bit of gusto. Like, and Fred isn't Paul Pogba, so it's like, why are you hitting the ball that high to him?
But it's not even, this is my point, it's not even trying to play football, it's trying to play something. There's nothing there.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
They didn't try and defend deep and block Brighton out and then counter-attack them like they did last season. They didn't try and impose their style of play and dominate this possession.
It's just incoherence. Pogba
and Fred just kept clipping balls into the channels, because that was the only thing that they thought may have worked when Lukaku was pulling wide. Rashford came on, and it was the complete lack. Like, Pogba, every time he gave the ball away, and he did it a lot, which again you can balance with, it was sort of the Alexis Sanchez syndrome of just trying a bit too hard, but maybe because nothing else is going on. So Pogba sort of took on the brunt. Alexis Sanchez obviously was left out today through injury. Pogba took on that brunt of, like, I've got to try and create something here, because, one, we're not told how to create something, or we don't have a specific pattern of play that is our go-to Like, if I pass it to the fullback, he passes midfield, into Lukaku, layoff, through ball, something really basic like that. They don't even try anything like that. There's no pattern of play, and it becomes Pogba just trying to clip 0.01% chance of success balls into the channel for someone to get onto. And every time he passed it away, he grabbed his shirt, lifted it over his head, did a little jump in the middle, and that was Gundogan, because it was too late by then. It was like, I'm trying this now, but we're 2-0 down, because we just didn't have anything. As he said, the attitude of the whole team and himself was poor at the beginning. They obviously thought, we've won the first game, we're probably going to beat Brighton, we'll get revenge for last season. They underestimated them. And then not only was the attitude right, they didn't have anything in place to, if your attitude isn't right, what do we default to here? Right, back two blocks of four, we'll just defend for a bit, and then half time we'll get in. It was just shambolic. And as Mo said at the beginning, it's not... What happened on the pitch was a complete result of everything that's happened in the summer and building up to 2 years.
Yeah, so it's certainly a bad day at the office for
United. The funny thing is, of course, just a final word on it. The funny thing is, United fans last season were pointing to the defensive record, like best defensive record in the Premier League. Yeah. And I remember Jake's been saying, it's because De Gea was amazing, and he was. And it's just funny because you expect bare minimum a Jose Mourinho team to at least defend well and look be boring and everything. But United don't even defend well. And Jake has said this many times, you don't even defend well. It's just De Gea is a miracle. And Bailey's very good at last-ditch tackles, which they didn't come off against
Brighton. One gave away a penalty, didn't he?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Usually he's very good at that. Yeah. Didn't work against Brighton, gave away penalties, didn't look at it. And De Gea wasn't in miracle mode. I mean, last season he saves that penalty with his feet. Changes the whole game.
He doesn't save penalties. He's conceded his last eight.
Well, yeah. But
and all five in the World Cup. There's that stat, isn't there, that he's, since the World Cup, he's faced 14 shots and conceded 10 goals.
I mean,
which again, is just, this is what I'm saying. In the way that Cristiano Ronaldo, everyone at the beginning of the last season was like, he's finished, he's got a 2% conversion rate. He finished with 44 goals. De Gea was so good last season. Now, it's sort of averaging out a bit. It's like he's having his little poor patch, but he's going to win them points the rest of the season. It's just, this is that one blip where you can't always be superhuman.
Which is, he's set himself such
big standards. Brighton were the team to take advantage of it.
I think basically what we're going to see is Mourinho will get sacked very soon, because it's going to escalate, and it will just come to a head probably in a Champions League game.
Yeah.
Or maybe maybe there'll be a big humiliating defeat. When do United play Liverpool? I'm sure that'll...
Spurs next.
Certainly never boring at Manchester United, is it? So we will move on slightly to Chelsea. Obviously, Chelsea-Arsenal was quite one of the... What a game for starters, like Premier League almost.
Pure
what
you want
to see. Another
pure
two,
Barclays.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. That was pure Barclays.
Chelsea obviously got the win. But just in terms of Chelsea, Sarri's come in, they've won their first two. How much are they looking like, he wants them to look, do you think? After two games, it's hard to say.
Yeah, it's hard. Well, I think, again, the beauty of having players that are good players have been able to adapt well to the system, it seems. We're seeing N'Golo Kante becoming this sort of space invading runner.
He created four chances, I think, more than anyone
else.
He is
really adapted to that Adam role well.
It just shows that N'Golo Kante is perhaps one of the best midfielders in the world, like top three.
Yeah.
The fact that he was brilliant at... And what's funny is everyone... Because he's never been a holding... getting into sort of like the nuance of the definitions here, but he's never been a holding midfielder.
No, in every team
he's played in a midfield too. At France was the first time at the World Cup where he's really sat at the base, and obviously, he was very good at that. So we've seen him now in the space of 6 months. We've seen him in three completely different midfield roles. There's one in a two-man midfield where he literally has to do the complete running for a more creative, less mobile midfielder. Drinkwater at Leicester, it was. Mm-hmm. Fabregas really at Chelsea towards the end of Conte's time. And then in the World Cup, we saw him sit at the base and again, just hoover up tackles, but give the ball to Pogba, give the ball to Matuidi in front of him. And then now we're seeing him play the sort of what Pogba was doing for France, still being disciplined, still winning tackles, but being that late runner and the amount... He's breaking off side traps now. Mm. And the fact he can do it is just a testament to how good he is as a footballer.
Yeah.
And when Leicester bought him, he was obviously a right winger. So he's got
that
sort of... maybe he's enjoying this and thinking, I can get forward again and I can test myself out. But his rate of development has been obscene. Mm. And the fact that he's now not mastering, it's two games in, that would be hyperbolic to say that. But the fact that he looks comfortable in this new role is just so scary, because it just means Sarri's got this completely moldable. If Jorginho got injured, Kante could play there.
Well, you'd have probably said, can anyone get more out of Kante than we've got? You would have said no. And yeah, it looks like
exactly,
they will be.
That's exactly the point.
It's funny, the Kante, everyone, of course, because he's short and black and tackles people, they compared him to Makalele. But he's never been anything like Makalele. Like Jake says, he's never really played at the base being a metronomic passer like Makalele was. The closest thing was for France, but even then, he didn't really do that. Mm. Usually he's a more energetic kind of defensive midfield box. The guy who I compare him to is Rino Gattuso, because he plays exactly like that. He plays central midfield most of the time. Amazing defensive energy, absurdly high motor, really, really good energy, great thrusting runs forward as well. He's better on the ball than Gattuso was. He's better with the ball than Gattuso was. Gattuso couldn't really dribble like this, but essentially he's that same kind of player. I think that's why he's settled in so well, because if you remember the Milan side, the great Milan side, Pirlo played at the base of midfield on that team, kind of like Jorginho does. And Gattuso was the shuttle. And it's almost like Sarri has taken that Milan mould without Kaká at the head of the diamond. He's taken the Seedorf, the...
I think his midfield. It was pure... Maybe he was influenced. His side at Napoli had these exact same roles. You had Alan, who won the most tackles in the team but wasn't the holding midfielder.
Yeah.
He was this complete vertical runner that would... played in that right-hand channel, and he'd be in one person's box and then in the defensive box in the other. Jorginho never moved. He was there and he controlled the whole play. And then they've obviously... Hazard still hasn't played. Mm. He still hasn't started a game. He looks like he's going to explode.
Yeah, I should probably retract my flop of the season, right?
But no, we'll obviously...
He hasn't played yet, so...
Yeah, exactly. It's still early. Maybe he's just going to be an impact bench player. But genuinely, and then another player that I think is going to love this Sarri system is Pedro. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because now he gets to play that sort of roam. He's not on the ball loads. Obviously, when Conte was in charge, William was the right winger. Pedro sometimes came in. When Hazard plays false nine, then all three played. But Hazard hasn't been able to start, so William is becoming the ball-carrying left winger that sees more of the possession and hasn't been incredible in it. I think when Hazard comes in, you'll see Chelsea go up a level just because how good he is. Yeah. But Pedro gets to be this sort of goal-scoring, roaming threat that doesn't get many touches of the ball, but every touch he has is usually going to be decisive, or it's going to be in the final third. So Sarri's walked into finding this finding these players that have been actually perfect for his roles. The ones we were concerned about was maybe left back. And Marcus Alonso is famously a left wing back in that he's never really played as a full back. But he's looking really straight. He still gets to go forward in this system. He's getting more touches than he's ever had on a ball. And he's making use of them. What I was scared about Alonso is because of his height, and he's not really built like a fullback, or he doesn't look very agile. You're scared that if you give him too much of the ball, he's going to start falling over himself. But he's made me look silly, and he looks very good going forward. And that little trio that came on for the last 20 minutes against Arsenal, Kovacic 100% tackles, 100% take-ons, which was only one, but still, 100%. And 100% pass accuracy, 43 passes in 20 minutes. This guy is pure efficiency, and that's all you need from that role, because he's going to work in tandem with Alonso Hazard. And that little left-sided triangle is going to be devastating.
Yeah, that Kovacic is going to fit in nicely in their hamstring role. Pedro, this is the thing, Pedro at Barcelona became world-class, became world-famous because he wasn't on the ball. Messi was false nine. Yeah. Messi had so much of the ball. Pedro was the third scoring option behind Messi, and then whoever the left winger was, David Villa, Thierry Henry, whoever. And Pedro would just show up, finish moves off, be a little wall-passing thing for Messi, and that was it. He wasn't asked to dribble. He struggled at Barcelona when he had to dribble, in 11-12, when he became second scoring option. When 12-13, when he had to be on the ball more, he was like, oh, what the hell do I do? I don't know what I'm doing. Because he wasn't good. He's not good at that. He's actually very, very, like, mid-table, lower mid-table level of a on-the-ball winger. But off-the-ball winger, he's literally one of the best players in the world. So, and then Sarri has just returned him to that. So I think Pedro might even be Chelsea's top scorer this season. You look at the way he plays off the ball, the way he moves, it's so hard to keep track of the guy. And I mean, remember when they beat United 4-0, Chelsea beat United 4-0 under Conte, and like the first 30 seconds, Pedro rinsed United with that one run.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the kind of thing he can do.
He's going to be coming in out from in so much, because ideally, obviously, they've got Morata playing up front who could excel, but they usually had that Mertens false nine was completely roaming, and he'd drop off, and that means that Pedro comes in from the right and takes his space. So Chelsea have got the building blocks of looking very scary and attacking, but they still conceded some very, very, very good chances against Arsenal.
Defensively, they'll need to work it out. Like, Alonso is not a great defender, let's put it that way. He's obviously physically capable of doing it. David Luiz has not been picked for his defending. He's picked for his ball playing. And Jorginho, as good as he is, defensive midfield in the Premier League is a bit of a different kind of thing. So let's see. I mean, they'll get better. They'll get much better
because
it's with practice. And next season, I do believe Chelsea will challenge for the title next season.
Yeah.
As long as they invest, obviously,
yeah,
I should say.
Build.
They look very good. Arsenal, though.
I was going to say, yeah, moving on to Arsenal. Obviously, an impressive start for Chelsea in terms of two wins, but it is two defeats for Arsenal. And team selection is getting a little bit criticised.
Too hard games, though.
I know. Yeah, the team selection is starting to be criticised already, and you think, is the patience going to be there? And what do you make of it, Jake?
There are definitely reasons to be worried.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of reasons to be positive as well. Arsenal should have scored four goals in that. They scored two, and they had at least three other chances to score others. Whether that would have aggregated to about three goals, basically, they should have had more than two in that first half.
Yeah.
Because the patterns of play are there. You can see I said this after on sort of review of week one. We didn't get to see any of the attacking against Man City because Arsenal got dominated. Mm. But in this Chelsea game, in that period that Sarri described as woeful for Chelsea, that 20-minute period, there were clear patterns of play that were developing for Arsenal that should be seen as positives. And Iwobi's goal, Opta count sort of sequence data, and it's just amount of passes basically in a move. Mm-hmm. And it was 19, which is the most by any team in the Premier League so far. So that is a clear indication that Emery, the passing out the back that's been heavily criticised, I still don't think the personnel is there to fully exploit that, but the idea and the philosophy is there. And it resulted in a goal. And obviously that was one goal in a 3-2 defeat that we'll now get forgotten about. Mm. But if that was there in sort of its embryonic stages, that can be developed, and we'll see more goals scored like that from Arsenal this season, because there's a clear idea to use the fullbacks really high and wide. Obviously, 19-year-old Guendouzi has been Arsenal's best player in these two games, and it was his sort of line-breaking pass to Bellerin. Then there was a cutback, and there was the famous video of Guendouzi absolutely smashing the floor because he'd played this world-class pass. Like, I'm sorry, if any other player does that, then they get praised for it. And it was a world-class pass. Bellerin cut it back perfectly. Aubameyang, who is on the pitch because he doesn't miss those, missed it. And Guendouzi was rightfully angry, but Arsenal fans will love seeing him slam the floor like that, because they've not had anyone like that for years, sort of thing. So he's definitely a positive light. The patterns of play are a positive light. And as I said, although Arsenal arguably have played in this way and lost two games, they're trying to play.
Yeah, which is contrasting to Man United.
Yeah, and that's the point I was trying to make. With Man United, yes, they won their first game. Yes, they've lost the other one. They've got more points. But overall, I genuinely feel that, although Arsenal have played the two difficult games as well, but I genuinely feel that if it's that visible, a philosophy is that visible, then over the course of a season, it's going to reap rewards. Maybe in the World Cup, Emery's Arsenal, they'd be out already, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Obviously. But over a 38-game season, and then next season, they will overtake Man United in terms of where they're finishing the table, because there's a clear way they want to play with investment and with more practice. It becomes better.
There's three things I'd say about Arsenal as far as I'm concerned. Guendouzi, it's ironic they've signed him now, because he's the most Wenger player I've seen. Like, classic Wenger player, like unknown French wonder kid, midfielder, beautiful passer. Yeah, like, it's like you signed him now. You couldn't, obviously he wasn't available to sign earlier, but it's just, Wenger's looking at him thinking, oh, for God's sake, why couldn't you have existed 2 years ago? The other thing is, I think, very early to judge Arsenal defensively, as much as they are rocky, because their defensive masterpiece hasn't really played yet. Mm-hmm. Lucas Torreira has been on the bench, come on both games. Once he starts, once he gets adapted, that's going to be literally a game changer. Because if you look at the way he influenced Uruguay when he came in, and Uruguay are a much better team than Arsenal in terms of organisation and coherence, and he still had a huge impact on them, so he's going to have a massive impact. Him and Guendouzi, Granit Xhaka, but him and Guendouzi
at the moment, definitely.
Guendouzi and Torreira are going to be a really good midfield player. I think Xhaka still has a part to play, especially against weaker teams where Arsenal are going to dominate the ball. I think Xhaka will come in and just kill it. But Arsenal basically have three midfielders now. Guendouzi can sort of do it all. Torreira's your defender, and then Xhaka's your passer. So they can mix it up depending on who they're playing. The fourth thing is, Unai Emery's teams are always really ropey first half of the season, and they're really good second half season. I think Arsenal will follow that.
Got to be patient.
Everyone criticises Unai Emery. Oh, what are you doing, Unai? You look rubbish. And then second half season, all the players, because usually he has to deal with players leaving and players coming in with Sevilla or Valencia. And you know, and then they eventually build a chemistry and they get good. So I think the same sort of thing with Arsenal right now, because they've had a lot of transfer turnover. And this is in part why he was such a smart appointment. Not just because of the Europa League thing, but because he's very good at gelling a squad together. Mm-hmm. And I think he'll take this squad. And they might lose a few more games. They might be out of league title contention, Champions League contention by Christmas. But second half of the season, they will look... I predict they will be very good. Mm-hmm. They will play some phenomenal football. They will beat some teams black and blue. And I think next season, again, with the proper investment, they could actually start to push forward for things. Because I think Unai Emery is a very, very smart coach. And like Jake says, already you can see patterns of play. They're still going to take time to learn it. But Unai Emery's form is ropey first half, amazing second half.
The last thing I'd say is, obviously, Xhaka has been woeful in these first two games. Yeah. And as a fan of him and a believer in what he does well, these games have been his least ideal situations to look good, and he's looked really bad. But as Mo sort of touched on there, in terms of ball progression and building play, Arsenal need him and they look worse when he doesn't play. So when they do play teams where it'll be a bit less intense and they need to break down, he will play role. He'll probably sit, him or Torreira maybe sit together, and they just start every move and just make relentless passing options. But the other thing that is obviously a massive worry is this defensive line that is completely... it's in such early stages again. Mustafi and Socrates are completely out of sync. One's stepping up, one's dropping back, and that's how Chelsea got in so many times. And the one worry is that because the fullbacks are the only width Arsenal have, because they don't have any wingers, they're getting massively exposed. So I think he will stick with this sort of two-man midfield, because Guendouzi and Torreira, for example, if they sit, then if teams start to counter-attack, we saw Pep Guardiola bring his fullbacks narrow to stop counter-attacks. Arsenal can't afford to do that, because if they stay narrow, they haven't got any wingers. When you're blessed with Sterling and Sané, then you obviously want them to stay wide. Arsenal don't have any wingers, so the fullbacks will be wide, but it's now up to Guendouzi and Torreira to be those inside covers on the counter-attack, which, as of yet, because of the weird defensive line... Well, it's not weird. It's weirdly executed.
Yeah.
It's bizarrely executed, and it looks like they haven't practiced it when... They clearly have, because they're trying to implement it. So there are massive cracks that need to be sort of plastered over, maybe quicker than Emery was expecting to, but there are clear positives that will be able to be built upon. Mm. And losing your first two games, something that Wenger never did, which is quite funny. Yeah. It was against two very difficult teams. Exactly. And they had the chances to beat Chelsea, but they also conceded. I think I said as well in the preview, I said Arsenal could score a lot of goals this season, but they're going to concede plenty.
Another day, Arsenal beat Chelsea.
Aubameyang will score. In terms of expected goal, I can imagine that was huge. I don't know the exact number, but he will be operating around sort of 0.8.
So patience is kind of key for Arsenal at the moment. Definitely. There's positive signs. Last couple of points on the Premier League weekend. First of all, Jake can bask in a bit of glory of the... He said Mendy would create a lot of goals for Man City, provided free assists in the Premier League this season more than any other player. So that is happening already, isn't it?
Yeah, he's the sort of... And we're sort of developing a bit of content today that's like he's the deep block siege weapon that Man City didn't have last season.
Yeah.
That's what they bought him for. And Pep Guardiola said it last week. He said, I sometimes want to kill him, but he's great. Yeah. And after this game, he said that's exactly what we needed against these teams. And they played this 3-5-2. And I remember saying last season, it's Pep Guardiola was always conscious of what Mendy would bring, but it was like, how are they going to cover for him being their extreme wide crosser of the ball? And they just moved to a back three. They bought Laporte, and that means the centre midfielder, like I was saying with Arsenal there, doesn't need to tuck in. They've got three defenders covering, and the system worked perfectly. And in terms, Mendy has the most open play crosses in the league this season after two games, 16. Mm-hmm. The most, and the next Man City player on that list has three. So already it's clearly like, if we're going to cross the ball, we're giving it to Benjamin Mendy because he's going to fire it in shin height. Aguero and Jesus will love that and just move in front of defenders and tap it in.
He's only the best low crosser in the world. The whip and Mendy gets on them is ridiculous. And he is the game-changing thing for City, because last season, obviously, City struggled with Huddersfield. I think more apart from Liverpool, no one else really gave them as much.
Well, Huddersfield were the only team to keep a clean sheet in the Premier League.
It's like, how do you break them down? Pep's obviously, there was the famous thing where he picked his team and Wagner was like, we're going to wait to see how they line up before we tell you how we line up. Because obviously, Wagner's being very clever there. But what Pep did was just, it was like, drop your great wingers, because it's like they struggled last season to break down this block. Play 3-5-2, and then just essentially you overload the middle of the pitch. You overload the middle of the pitch with your centre backs, because you step up Laporte and Stones to support Gundogan and Fernandinho. You've got four guys there. Company's back patrolling things in case it gets hairy. You got your full backs wide. You draw like David Silva and Bernardo Silva just went crazy on the right hand side. They were double teaming, creating so much space. Silva created two glorious chances for Gabriel Jesus after like 5 minutes, and it was like clearly the idea was move it wide, draw the defense one way, hit it the other way, and there's going to be spaces. And that's what happened. And then when they worked the ball to Benjamin Mendy wide, Huddersfield had no answer, because not only is he furiously fast and strong, but he's also really, really good at releasing the ball far early and releasing it into dangerous areas where it's hard for Huddersfield. If you're whipping crosses in, Huddersfield centre backs can generally get their range. If you're whipping it low, it's harder for you to walk back to your own goal and clear it at the same time. Yeah. It's much harder to do that. And because he plays the ball early as well as low and fast, it's very hard to clear his crosses. And the thing with Aguero is his movement when they're playing two up front with Jesus and Aguero. It's like Jesus can sort of hold the centre or whatever, and Aguero can just make those near post runs, far post runs. And I mean, you saw that in the goals, like the third goal where he's making a run. Obviously, it's a goalkeeping mistake. He spills the ball, but the run that Aguero makes is possible because Jesus is also on the field. And it's just, this is Pep Guardiola at his most Pep Guardiola. Like, he's figured out already, like, okay, this is how we take care of the team that really troubled it. Now, I'm really curious to see how he handles Liverpool, because now that he's got Benjamin Mendy, and this is the one.
The thing is, what they did against Liverpool is they tried to do that with Sané.
Yeah.
I remember we spoke about it a lot last season. Sané against Liverpool, the most touches he had in the game was against Liverpool, because they were like overloading it and they went, Leroy, we'll give it to you, do something. And it just shows that even Leroy Sané, considered one of the best wingers last season, he struggled to do that. And now they've got a left wing back that executed it perfectly. Obviously, it was against Huddersfield. Being against Liverpool's high press will be different. But another sort of crossing stat, which is like, this is what Mendy does. That's what he's on the pitch to do. Sometimes it looks like he's miscontrolled it. Somehow gets his left foot and it's rolling across your 6-yard box at 90 miles an hour. Impossible to defend. But the most open play crosses per game, he had 12 against Huddersfield in that game, which is the most by a Man City player since he joined the club. Next is Mendy against Bournemouth with 11. Next is Mendy against Watford. So he's only played about 10 Premier League games and he's already got the three most crosses in a single game for Man City. He is the unique thing that they were missing from last season, and now they have it. Yeah. What they struggled with against last season, arguably, were these deep blocks that sometimes you just couldn't break down. Raheem Sterling kept scoring last-minute winners, but you can't rely on that as a thing.
Untenable.
Yeah, you can't. That's not, as we said with De Gea, that's not a sustainable tactic. Raheem Sterling will score a last-minute winner. Whereas if you say Benjamin Mendy's going to fire in 15 crosses,
yeah, you'd back them to score, wouldn't you?
That is a tactic. Yeah. And as Mo said, they don't just give it to him and do it. They work. David Silva was incredible, and it was so beautiful to see his son at the beginning of the game.
Yes. They should bring that kid to every game, man.
Yeah,
he plays like that.
Well, Mendy said he was actually, Mateo was man of the match, which is quite funny. But yeah, so David Silva, 250th game, incredible. And as we said, Bernardo Silva was nominally the right wing back, but he just worked with David Silva in that pocket, and then they switched it to Mendy, bang. So there was a tactic there, and now they have another option, which is scary.
Yeah, this is the thing, isn't it? Because the whole thing with Sané when he played out there against Alexander-Arnold is because Sané, first off, is not bigger or stronger than Alexander-Arnold, which is one thing that we can't overlook with Mendy. The other thing is he's a winger, so he's naturally like maybe to dribble, try and take it inside, take him on, and that slows you down. When he's your outlet, you're giving the ball constantly. That's not what you want. You want a guy who's going to take one touch and bang it in the box, and that's what makes Mendy so much better. And of course, he's bigger and stronger than pretty much everyone else he's going to face. Like, there's no right back that's going to physically live with him. Yeah. So already,
Kyle Walker.
Well, exactly.
In terms of speed.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, so it's very hard to athletically keep up with Mendy, and then technically he's phenomenal. His ability to hit the ball first time low and bend it around like that.
That is difficult
it's,
to do.
It's absurd. Like, yeah, like literally, you can count the number of guys who can do it in the world on one hand. Mm. It's really an impressive skill, and it's such an overlooked part of Mendy's skill set. But I think it won't be for long, because I think what you're seeing now is, like Jake says, that's what he does, and that will be their weapon. They won't do it every game.
Yeah, of course.
They won't, because this is the thing. Pep's very smart. I think I imagine, I don't know if they're playing the next game, but I imagine it'll be the wingers will be back, and it'll be pass, get to the wingers. You know, also I think we'll see a lot more Phil Foden now that Kevin De Bruyne is out for 3 months. I think because I think David Silva, Bernardo Silva in midfield together is a bit too samey, so they'll need to mix it up a bit. I think Gundogan will play a lot more, and then I think Phil Foden will play a lot more. But anyway, Pep has options. Yeah. They couldn't keep relying on Sterling doing miracles, because that's not sustainable. You need an actual strategy. So Pep has kept his strategy from last season. He's formulating new strategies, and this is why City looked the class of the Premier League, because he's just a great coach. He has a great squad.
And just before we move on to a bit of Serie A and La Liga, Kane scored in August.
Way!
I mean, ended that.
It would have been bothering him a little bit, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So he just pleased to get it out of the way.
With Harry Kane, it would have bothered him immensely, because you can see that this guy just he lives for scoring goals. Like, he's got that Cristiano Ronaldo kind of hunger and obsession. I bet you, as much as he was upset that England didn't win the World Cup or get to the final, I bet he was really upset. I guarantee you, when he was watching the final on TV, wherever he was, and he saw his name got forgotten, I bet he was like, "Yeah."
But even Pochettino said when he came back, he should have scored more. Like, he's obsessed with scoring more.
Yeah.
And obviously, Barry Beckham turned up again.
He's gonna make
a living out of that.
Here's the thing: Fulham were actually very good, right?
Yeah.
And again, we're talking about progress and process and how that will pan out. And I think Fulham's process, you've seen in two games this season, they've not had the kind of results they wanted. But you see the way they've played, and you can see, okay, this is gonna work. Mm. This is gonna, because look, against Everton, I mean, Fabry was just terrible. And he wasn't particularly bad against, like, he couldn't do anything about the Spurs goals, but he again was poor, spilling crosses, just floundering around, looking pretty useless. And I think once they can get Sergio Rico in, and once they can get Alfie Mawson in, that's going to transform the way that Fulham defend. And I think that's going to give them a bit more solidity to play. And you look at the way they play, and I don't want to take too much focus away from Spurs, because they were good, they were worthy winners and everything and so forth. But Fulham's process is really impressive. And I think once they get their new signs integrated, once they get Schürrle integrated, and I think they're going to be very, very good. Because the way they play football is, you can see they have a plan. They have a really concrete plan. Seri is already looking very good. I just think Fulham are going to be very... But Spurs, yeah. I mean, if you're Pochettino, you must be so mad at Daniel Levy, because you're like, look, here we are again. The players look bang up for it again. We can probably challenge our title again, but we're going to come short because our squad is too thin.
Absolutely.
And these players are going to get knackered in March. Where's my bloody backups, Daniel Levy? Yeah. And it's like, oh, look, Lamella's fit again. New signing. You know,
five new contracts.
If you've got
them for 4 more years. Yeah, but they might not have any legs by then.
If he had signed, it must be so frustrating for Pochettino, because if they had signed like 2 or 3 players, and not even like world-class players, just like good prospects that Pochettino can actually work with. I mean...
Grealish would have been a good pick-up.
Yeah, like the one thing you can say of them is that Harry Winks, if he stays fit, will be a really, really, really like good player this season. Yeah. I mean, but he got injured last season and didn't really impact the back end. And he was phenomenal in the first half season against Real Madrid of all teams, wearing the number 8. I think he'll be good, but they still need some more guys in attack, man. You know, it's just, I mean... Harry Kane scored in August, and that's great for him. And he should have had a hat trick.
You know he's going to go 10 games without scoring now.
Yeah, though. Exactly.
I mean, I don't know. But
one August goal is sacrifice. He's actually sacrificed to the goal gods.
I mean,
and now he won't score until February.
Poch is brilliant. Spurs are very, very good. I think, they'll run out of legs because they don't have the squad. I think, and Son will come back from the 18 games exhausted. He'll need like a month to recover from that. So he's basically going to be out of commission until like November would be my guess, October, in terms of being useful, because he's going to come back from the Asian game exhausted. Spurs are great to watch. They play good football. They're probably going to either destroy Man United or somehow lose to Man United next week. They'll either take them to part because they're a much better team, or they'll inexplicably find a way to lose them, like they did in the FA Cup.
They'll be licking their, like, Harry, if Glenn Murray is making Bailly and Lindelof look like 12-year-old schoolboys, Harry Kane will be thinking,
and Dele as well.
I'm going to do that as well. Yeah, Dele Alli, like one of the best off the ball movers. What did what tore Man United apart? They there were so many. He must have been looking at the gaps created in that defence and going, cool, I'm going to run into all of those.
And yeah, Barry Beckham, mate. Barry Beckham sending in those crosses. United are going to give away free kicks. They're quite unlucky with that.
Yeah, Fred's been quite guilty of that.
Don't do that against Spurs, man. This guy, he sent Christian, he's like, go on, Christian, walk away. And you're like, wait a minute, hang on a minute. I mean, like, you're thinking, it's Christian Eriksen, man. What are you doing? And then he just bangs it in, and you're just like, well, that's what you're doing. Well done.
Yeah, well, Spurs, Man United, we're definitely looking forward to that next weekend. Yeah. But just looking back on around Europe, Serie A this weekend, Cristiano Ronaldo made his debut in the league. Yeah. I think 1-3-2, he wasn't involved in any of the goals. How did he do on his first game?
We've all spotlight on it. Look, it's typical. If you're analysing it like without the name, with his face blanked you'd be like, he was rubbish. But it's Cristiano Ronaldo, so you know, he was rubbish, but you know why. Because physically, he's preparing himself to come good second half of the season. He was terrible for Hotspur.
He's had 1 week training.
He's not fully fit anyway. And even if he was fully fit, he wouldn't be at his peak because that's not how his body works. He trains himself to be fit second half of the season in the crunch games. Look, it's funny actually, I think, because Juve, all the goals scored in the game except for the own goal were basically all Cristiano goals. Like the goals he'd scored, like a really good penalty, really good penalty, and then just some astounding headers. Like the first equaliser was just an incredible header. And it's funny actually, because you say he wasn't involved in the goals, he did knock out Sorrentino, the Chievo goalkeeper, with his unintentionally. It was an accident. He handballed it and then knocked the goalkeeper out in like 1 second of each other. And then Sorrentino had to go off, and he was Chievo's best player. He had actually earlier denied Cristiano with
impact, really.
He did, really, because then Juve scored like 2 minutes later. Juve are a better team than anyone else in Serie A.
They're still comfortable favourites to win the league.
Yeah, if you look at their like in terms of what we're saying about recruitment, theirs is very much, we've won the league for 7 years, that's fine. What do we need to do? We need to make the most of this incredible group that we have and try and one more push for the Champions League. And that's what they've done. They've sort of said, we'll get rid of Caldara, who in the future could be just as good as Bonucci potentially. He's very highly rated. Mm. But they've said, let's get Bonucci back in because we know he's really, really good. We'll buy Mr. Champions League, put him up front. Because that's what I was interested. I was pretty sure they were going to do it, especially getting rid of Higuain. But yeah, Cristiano Ronaldo as your number nine. Behind him, Douglas Costa, Dybala and Cuadrado. Although, can become Bernardeschi.
Although actually, if you look at what he played, much better once Mandzukic came on.
Okay.
And so, because he was good in the first half. He wasn't bad. And again, when he's fit, it'll be a whole different kind of thing because they'll play more on the break, more in transition. He'll be able more physically capable. But once Mandzukic came on, suddenly he was, I mean, he moved a bit wide, a bit too much, but suddenly he was finding more space and he was making the kind of runs that actually, like, if he had been fit, would have actually caused problems for teams. And I think, and I said before this in the previous season, I think Mandzukic is going to be key to unlocking Cristiano, because he's not only is he like the sort of selfless Benzema kind of workhorse that you need, but he's also just a phenomenal aerial target, and he just draws attention because he's so big.
But that's the thing as well, is Mandzukic has played seasons at left wing.
Yeah.
So there's Ronaldo options. Can go back there, but say if Ronaldo's gone up and scored a goal or sort of has worked his way into the box to be getting on the end of a cross or something, Mandzukic will be like, you're in there, that means I have to go left wing. And like, he will do it though as well. That's what, he can trust him. So so maybe Cuadrado misses out, Douglas Costa goes on to the right. You've got Dybala, who obviously is incredible, had a brilliant goal-scoring season last season. And I think he'll thrive playing with all these sort of more poachers. That's why maybe he clashes too much with Messi, and that's why they don't click. Yeah. Now he's got someone that is born to score goals in front of him. He's got a hard-working left-winger that will then substitute up front. They've got Bernardeschi, Cuadrado coming off the bench. They've got Pjanic in midfield. Juventus are trying to build. They'll win Serie A most likely. Mm-hmm. What they want to do is target that Champions League.
Juve are going to be terrifying to defend by from back post crosses, like Mandzukic and Cristiano at the back post. Then and on set pieces, you've got Bonucci and Chiellini as well. Yeah. I mean, that's a huge. And then Bernardeschi is massive as well. Look, a small shout out there to Pjanic. I thought
Bernardeschi would be taking the
free. I mean, Pjanic was really good, and I thought that just deserves a shout out in midfield. He was really, really good. Really ran the show. You can see why everyone wants him and why Juve don't want to sell him. Cristiano didn't look good, but like he was also he kept on. He didn't look defeated or anything. He kept on going. Yeah.
Well, when is he ever?
Well, yeah, he'll have his time, won't he?
Yeah, no, he will. I think he'll be top scorer this season. I think he'll come good in. He'll start playing reasonably well by his standards, by normal people's standards, in about like a week or two, maybe a month. And then by his standards, he'll start playing well in January or February.
Yeah.
And when the Champions League knockout stages come.
Because Juventus know that as well, don't they?
Yeah.
They know.
Yeah, no, they signed him for that. Like Jake says, they signed him to win the Champions League. They don't care. I mean, they don't care. They care about Serie A, but they can win it without him.
They've won it 7 years in a row without
Ronaldo. They signed him to win the Champions League.
I think Serie A in general, though, is really exciting anyway. Because obviously you've got that and they're maybe the biggest challenges for the Champions League, but like Inter Milan, whoever won again last season with AC Milan, everyone said, oh, look at the signings. They lost 1-0 to Sassuolo. Justin Kluivert came on and got an assist on his debut. Oh, incredible Dzeko, 89th minute winner. And then
Lazio's kit is...
Well, they put a sponsor on it. Well, have you seen the marathon bet? Yeah. Oh, wow. I mean,
it's one of the best. I mean, even with the sponsor, it's a phenomenal kit.
That upset me. But Giro Immobile scored that incredible
goal. It was a great goal. I was like, what the hell?
But he keeps banging them in. So Serie A is like definitely a league to sort of make sure you...
Eleven sports are rubbing their hands. Like, oh yeah,
yeah. That is one to definitely like Roma into AC Milan, obviously certainly, with Higuain.
Yeah, it'd been a good season to come for sure, and Ronaldo will definitely be in the mix come at some point. And talking of Ronaldo, obviously he's left La Liga. In terms of this, it's hard to say as early stages it is with all of them, but Barcelona and Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Who do you think looked better at the weekend and who do you think...
Barcelona easily looked better at the weekend. Yeah. But that's because Real Madrid still haven't really signed the one player they need to sign. Mm. They had lots of control. They were very, very... You can, again, it's talking about structure and process. You can see what Lopetegui is trying to do with Real Madrid. It's just they're lacking someone up front that can just sort of add a bite to them. Toni Kroos, 116, 118 passes, 98%.
Yeah.
Really, really, really good at the base of midfield. I mean, he was tested defensively. And this is the thing, it's a better team, they're going to have someone else in there because people just run by him for fun. But you can see that obviously, again, they've got a squad, so against better teams, maybe you put Modric in there, maybe you put Casemiro in there, maybe they sign a defensive midfielder, maybe they put Marcos Llorente in there. Mm-hmm. They've got better options to play defensive midfield than Kroos, but against weaker teams like Getafe at the Bernabeu, you just put Kroos in there. He's not great or anything, but... Mm.
Well, yes.
When he's got the ball, he's phenomenal. So, and then like you got your defensive midfielders making 116 passes, keeping the ball all the time, keeping the team moving forward. You've got guys carrying the ball, Ceballos and Isco carrying the ball forward. Bale looking reasonably up for it. Marcelo looked great. I thought Marcelo was probably their best player. Oh, apart from Kroos. And yeah, but the problem with Madrid. I mean, you look at their goals; they're both very scrappy. The first goal was a complete spilled cross and a fluky header, and then the second goal, the keeper really should save it. So they're lacking a striker to really sort of turn their dominance into production. If they can get a striker, though, they could be really, really good because they've got a good shape, they've got a good system, but it's just about getting that cutting edge back. But Barcelona Barcelona also need a striker, but only because Luis Suarez just looks finished. Yeah. But they have a much better system in place, and they also have the best player in the world, which kind of is a cheat code. But they look really good. They play really nice football. Ousmane Dembele looking like he actually has a place in the team now, which is good. Coutinho came on, phenomenal little cameo, really energized the side. Arthur looks good again. PKMT looked brilliant. They just look phenomenal. They look, in every aspect, they look really good, except striker, which is just the one big weakness they're going to have, I think.
I think with Messi, Jake, I mean, he scored Barcelona's 6,000th La Liga goal. 9.5 years off scoring their 5,000th. I mean,
I know.
What more can we say about
that? He made me have a late night because then I stayed up. I stayed up to find out who had scored all of those 1,000 goals.
Oh, really?
And it's quite scary to think that he contributed to 462 of them.
Wow. He has 6.4% of all of Barcelona's La Liga goals.
Yeah.
All of them, all 6,000. He has 6.4%.
But what was funny, he is unreal. And again, it wasn't just him scoring two goals in that game.
That was the least impressive part of the game.
He was top shots, top fouls won, top dribbles, top chances created, 100%. His numbers just unreal. Like every season he's top of every metric, and that's the sign of how he is probably the best footballer ever. Because he can, in terms of an attacker, he does everything. It's like a meme, isn't it? But his heat map, and it's just, he's got the goal scoring record of a striker and the heat map of a playmaker, etc. But in terms of those 1,000 goals, so he's scored 336. Suarez has got 110 of them. So pretty much triple the next anyway. Mm-hmm. Neymar's then 68. And then someone that we were talking about earlier, little Pedro, is on 58. And in terms of contribution as well, Messi 462, Suarez 165, Neymar 106. And then Pedro is fourth.
Yeah.
And that 1,000 goals.
Fair play to him.
So I think we're going to see a similar sort of...
Mm. Yeah, because I mean...
We're going to see that this season. Because
you know, Messi scored that 2009 goal in 2009, the first Pep Guardiola season. So you've got Pedro's whole career, basically, because he really started playing 9-10. So you've got his whole Barcelona career in there. And he was a big goal scorer. He was a really, really important goal scorer as a third option. I think Chelsea, I mean, unintentionally, they basically just signed him because they could. But I think they're really going to have
the best of him this season.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Sarri would have identified that straight. Because that's why Willian started playing on the left. Because he's like, Willian, you're good at dribbling.
Yeah.
You're good at carrying the ball. Yeah. You're going to be my ball carrier there. But on the right wing, I need someone that is smart.
And I mean, cut to Barcelona.
Sounded like DJ Khaled there. Didn't even realise.
DJ Jake.
Pedro's great. To go back to Barcelona, you know, Messi is the cheat code. This is, you know, it's very hard to look past him for anything, really. And I think, you know, Barcelona would be better anyway this season. Valverde's gone back to 4-3-3. He seems to be much more focused on attacking. Jordi Alba, I mean, Jordi Alba's the frustrating one. If Jordi Alba made decisions as good as Marcos Alonso does, he'd have like 15 goals, 15 assists every season. Like, it's mad. He's a left back. You watch how many times this guy gets the ball within shooting distance of the goal or passing distance of the goal and he messes it up. Yeah. Like, his movement is amazing. But honestly, if he made decisions as well as Marcos Alonso does, he would literally double assists, double figures assists and goals every season. That's how many chances Messi furnishes for the goal.
He doesn't pass. He doesn't do that bad in those numbers anyway.
No, he doesn't. But he could do much. It's weird to say.
That's what I mean. It's funny how what he's doing already is operating at a high level.
He's literally one of the best left backs in the world. But he underperforms every season. It's really quite strange.
We are just going to finish with your favourite things and predictions. La Liga wise.
Go on then.
If you try and keep it to a sentence or so per one. Because obviously there's plenty we could talk about. For La Liga, Jake, we'll start with you.
Okay.
Winners.
Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
Atletico Madrid. You happy with that?
Genuinely, yeah.
Just the complete package?
Well, they did what Spurs should have done.
Yeah.
Kept all their good players, signed some incredible ones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think Barcelona, purely because literally Leo Messi's only ever twice, he's only ever twice been beaten in a sprint, in a marathon to the league title. Like, that it just doesn't happen. Sorry, three times. And two of those times he was suffering with big injuries in the season. So unless he gets injured again, I just don't see it happening. Like, Barca would have to really
throw... One of them was to Atletico Madrid.
Yes, no, one of them was to Atletico Madrid. That's the thing, but
Diego Costa wearing his favourite number.
Number 19
shirt. The stars are aligning.
Oh, look, I mean, Atletico Madrid probably do look the favourites pre the season, but it's very hard to root against, to pick against Messi, who is just so absurdly consistent in the marathon of league titles.
Good one-word answer as well.
Oh, well, you know me, mate. One word.
Never going to be.
My one word is a 10-word answer. Barcelona, but just.
Just. This could be a good title race, to be fair.
Oh, yeah.
Surprise package, Jake. That was in last, you know, this season's Real Betis, for example. Who's the surprise going to be?
I wanted to just say them again. Because they've obviously made some good signings. But I think Valencia, although it's not really a surprise, if they can get Guedes back, I think they'll make another real push. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like a cop out, but Atletico Madrid, I think people don't realise how good they're going to be.
Yeah. I mean, they beat Real Madrid in European competition, which is incredible. Villarreal, they've signed very well. They lost Rodri, but they've signed Santiago Casares and Manu Morales, you know, young midfielders.
And Santi Cazorla
back. They unveiled with the magician, which is brilliant.
It was incredible.
Santi's going to really help. I mean, those two guys, Morales and Casares, they're young midfielders. And so I think Cazorla will be a very good sort of mentor for them. I think they've got Gerard Moreno, who I think is a very, very underrated striker. I think he's going to score a lot of goals for Villarreal this season. Mm-hmm. I think Villarreal are going to surprise a lot of people. I think they're doing the typical thing where they mid-table and then they're going to come back up into the top. Mm-hmm. They might even finish top four, frankly. They're definitely going to fight Valencia for that fourth spot.
I think the next one definitely could be one-word answer. Mm. Top scorer, Jake?
Messi.
There's just no doubt, is there really, with Ronaldo?
No, he's been top scorer the last 2 years anyway. So.
There we go. And finally, I don't know if either of you got relegation predictions.
Yeah, I think Depor survived by the skin of their teeth last season. I think that won't happen again. I think they're going to go down. Mm-hmm. I think Rayo, I love Rayo, but that was when Paco Gemes was there, so he's not there anymore. So I just think Rayo might go down as well. They got tonked by Sevilla. Mm-hmm. And then I think the third one is Huesca won at the weekend, right? They had a very, very big win against Eibar, but basically it was sort of a fluke. They were completely utterly under the cosh, nicked to win, and that's fair enough. But I feel like Huesca might not have enough as the season progresses. I'm not sure. I'm fairly certain about Rayo and Depor. I'm not the third one. I'm not sure, but I think Huesca maybe.
Mm-hmm. Certainly a relegation treble. I might have to look up.
I mean, it's going to be...
There's always one team in a Liga that was, like, good the season before and then gets 4 points.
It's going to be a very fun season, I think. We're going to have a really... We're going to have a three-way title race, proper three-way title race for the first time since 2013, 14, and 14, 15, which is when last time we really had one. So I think that's going to be really good to watch. I think there's a lot... Betis are going to be good. Valencia, Sevilla look really nice under Pablo Machin now. It's going to be a lot of quality stuff in La Liga. Betis, you know... And and Villarreal are going to be fun. And it's going to be great to see Real Madrid, because I think if Real Madrid get a striker, I think they could legitimately be a really exciting team to watch, because I think it's for years they've been the Cristiano show, which has been great, but it's sort of like one-dimensional in the way it works.
Yeah,
like
it's quite exciting to watch.
Well, and then he scores a goal, and it's like, okay, they win the game. And I think under Lopetegui, they've got so many good players that actually might now have the freedom to just sort of be hit more responsibility before, instead of like, okay, where's the Portuguese guy? Give him the ball so he can score. And I mean, look, I'm not knocking that as tactic, because it worked, because the guy scored, I mean, got 400 and something goals in 400 less, you know, loads of goals. And I told you, but it's going to be interesting to watch some of these players like step out of his shadow now. And I think, but they need a striker. They clearly need someone. I mean, Mauro Icardi to me makes the most sense out of anyone. Mm-hmm. I really hope they don't go for Lewandowski, because I think he's kind of...
I think he's sort of... Well, Bundesliga window's shut now.
Is it? Oh, okay. Well, that's probably not going to happen then, thank goodness.
Bundesliga is 31st. Serie A's shut.
Serie
A's shut now. So
it might be Lewandowski. Maybe
they've
won't be.
They've decided to do different dates.
I don't know. They need to have one day.
I just think this season, Serie A last season was probably the best title race.
Yeah.
But now I think that'll be La Liga.
Yeah.
I think Serie A, in terms of like just a general... In terms of Europe outside the Premier League, because I think the Premier League is really exciting this season again. But Serie A is so exciting because there's loads of new teams that have tried to make a claim.
Yeah.
So there could be more competitive. The title race, I think Juventus will run away, but it'll be more competitive around that. Mm-hmm. La Liga title race is going to be incredible. And then Liga, Kylian Mbappe is playing.
Oh my God, Kylian Mbappe comes to bench, two goals. This guy, honestly.
Just let's wrap up, Jake mentions Kylian Mbappe.
Well, no, that's his. No, it's actually worth a mention, because that was his 50th club career goal across all competitions.
Yeah.
And he's 20 in December, and he scored every 134 minutes in his team.
And more importantly than all of that, he's now wearing a proper shirt number, and he's wearing a kit that isn't hideous. So look, these are important things, because that PSG home kit last year was awful, and also in an interesting way to appease both him and Neymar, PSG will wear white in the Champions League.
Yeah, I saw that.
So look,
Ballon
d'Or. You know, him and Modric is going to be Real Madrid's big shout. Now, Serie A will put their weight behind Cristiano. La Liga will probably nominate Messi. Look, as much as it's a pointless award, it's probably the most open it's been for a while, because as much as...
Because Griezmann as well.
I mean, look, that's the thing, because with France, there are so many legit shouts for the French team. Mbappe and Griezmann, I think, very much genuine shouts for the Ballon d'Or. I think Griezmann won the Europa League, won the World Cup. Like really, really quietly efficient for France as well. I think he's probably
He's super good.
He probably will
get into the top three.
He'll get top three for sure. The only thing that might stop him from winning it is that he plays for Atletico Madrid, who aren't necessarily like
of the media. I think the top two are probably going to be the same, because obviously it carries on from January. But then Griezmann, oh wow.
What season ahead?
Football's brilliant. I think Mbappe's... Look, Mbappe, I'm just very happy for Mbappe.
Top five. Mbappe, he was seventh last year.
He might make the podium, mate, this year, honestly. He was so good at the World Cup, and then... Just he came off the bench and scored twice. Like literally, Neymar's like, "Oh, what do we do? I can't beat these guys." Killian's like, "Don't worry, mate, I got it." Comes off the bench,
and they were unreal goals.
Yeah, like I just think it's gonna. It sounds weird.
Sorry, that was my fault. That last.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Football's just so good. Yeah. We have to keep talking about it. Football is back. It is back, and across all the leagues in Europe, particularly.
Yeah,
like,
everyone's started now, hasn't it?
Yeah. So it's like best places it till next May. We've just got so much to talk about, and we will. But for now, we are just about out of time. So thanks to Mo again.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to Jake.
Thanks for surviving the Mbappe barrage at the end.
I loved it. And that's all I've got time for. So we'll speak to you next time.